is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Early detection comes early prevention.
Put lead in your pencil, make you feel like a champion.
Rise up again, let nothing keep you down. Live your best.
Every new volunteer.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Think you're losing grip of the man, don't give up on hope.
Don't be ashamed. It's time to take control. Get some help from the urologist.
You will find
he'll help you solve your problem.
On 96.9,
I'm telling you, early detection,
early.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is the Urologist Speaks with Bean. We have a very interesting talk, as always. This talk, well, I think like almost every talk we have, can be have a great impact on improving the quality of your life. But this talk can actually save your life. So when we think about and talk about possibly the greatest crisis facing Bahamian society and the very future of the Bahamas, I will have to argue that possibly the worst national crisis that we as a nation are facing is not crime, it's not immigration, it's not the failings of the educational system, but it's something that's very common in eating away at the health and the future of our society, and that's obesity. So obesity and the multitude of negative health ramifications linked to obesity, including cardiovascular disease, which is the number one killer not only in the Bahamas but throughout the world. Numerous cancers related to obesity, and I'll get into that later. Non-communicable diseases related to obesity, such as diabetes, hypertension, obstructive sleep apnea, hypercholesterolemia, and let's not forget to mention important topics such as obesity linking to anxiety, depression, insomnia, low self-esteem. So we are all very alarmed and very concerned by the crime in our society, which is evident. But we are truly not paying enough attention to what is really destroying our country from the inside out. So we're more likely to be killed by table salt, a lifetime consumption of table salt, or bacon, or excess alcohol, as examples, than by a bullet from a gun. So obesity is reducing the longevity of Bahamians and residents on this earth, and as many as 70% of Bahamians, including young persons, which is even more alarming, are obese. So I would have to say arguably the greatest threat to the future of our country and the health of our country and the wellness of our country, so the health of the nation, is the wealth of the nation, is obesity. So this is not my area of expertise. Obviously, as a very blessed and busy physician in this country and surgeon, I have to deal with patients with obesity all the time. But I brought in the experts. So I have my first cousin, Dr. Ariane Davis-Simmons, who I'm very proud of, who is a medical internist and a well-known endocrinologist. And we also have Dr. Jan Martin, who is a medical nutrition therapist and diabetes educator. So they're here to impart their wealth of information to try and save your life or save the life of someone you know. Good day, good evening, Ariane, and good evening, Dr. Jan Martin.
Thank you. Good evening.
So as I said, you are the experts. I'm going to try to lead the talk, but when we talk about obesity, we're not just talking about excess weight. We're basically talking about looking internally. We're talking about inflamed adipose tissue. We're talking about inflamed fat cells. And these fat tissues and fat cells release cytokines, going back to physiology. And these cytokines that circulate and destroy other organs, this can take the form of negatively impacting the liver, which can lead to fatty liver disease. It can negatively impact the pancreas, leading to diabetes. It can lead to heart disease. So losing weight can extend your life on this earth, and not only your life on this earth in terms of longevity, but the quality of life. Dan Davis Simmons, you see patients with obesity. You see patients with every form of obesity related to obstructive sleep apnea, related to low testosterone, related to sedentary lifestyle, related to hypothyroidism. Mm-hmm. Do you agree that obesity is one of the greatest crises of our lifetime?
It is, definitely. It's definitely a pandemic, and it's an epidemic. So even when we look at our population, 80% of individuals in the Bahamas are either overweight or obese. Right, so overweight meaning that their BMI is 25 to 29, and obesity meaning BMI is over 30. So that's, even in our children, we're seeing up to 23 to 25% of children who are overweight and obese. So as you said, I mean, it's not just vanity and how you look in your clothes. This excess fat is affecting us head to toe. So when we're talking about, as you said, depression, anxiety, sleep apnea, infertility for, you know, for female and males, low testosterone. The sheer weight is killing people's joints. So it becomes this vicious cycle. They're so heavy that they have difficulty walking. And if they can't exercise, they can't lose weight. So it becomes this real vicious cycle. You have fatty liver, which can then lead to cirrhosis and end-stage liver disease. So it is just head to toe. And obviously diabetes, high cholesterol, heart attack, strokes, and not to talk about cancer. So the risk of obese and solid cancers, there is a significant increased risk. So we're talking about prostate, colon cancer, breast cancer. So it is basically we're eating ourselves to death.
For the Bahamian men out there who are sucking their teeth and said, well, I'm not walking anywhere. I like my fast food. I like to drink my beers every night. Obesity will lead to erectile dysfunction. So I know I got your attention right now. You got to lose that weight if you want to maintain your erections until you're later years on earth and maintain a good erection. So if that's not a motivation, I don't know what is, and that's the most important thing to any Bahamian man out there. So Dr. Jan Martin, you work intricately with thousands over the years, over the decades, of Bahamians who are fighting obesity, who are fighting diabetes. Why do you see that we're losing the battle? What is happening? Things are getting worse decade by decade.
Definitely, things are getting worse. You know, for instance, in 2014, we were sixth in the world for our obesity numbers. And in 2024, we ranked fourth in the world. So, yes, we are getting worse. And as Dr. Ariane said, you know, the numbers just keep rising. Now we have children. So what is it? It is the food we're eating, and it's the highly processed foods that we're eating. When I talk to patients, I always say to them, well, firstly, I said, okay, tell me, give me an idea of what you're eating in a day, in a week. And most often than not, it is prepackaged foods. It is potato chips. It is the ramen noodles with the high salt, the sodas, the juices. And a lot of people, believe it or not, think that Vita Malt is very nutritious and has no sugar. So it's the juices, the Vita Malts, the sodas, and very little water. And then they're not moving as regularly. So we're not moving. We're eating a lot of highly processed foods. I always say to Bahamians and patients who sit, anything in a package, anything in a bottle, they have to add additives to make it taste good. And with those additives and artificial flavorings, those are the calorie counting. Those are the ones with the more fat and the more sugars. And that sticks in your body and causes all these diseases obesity.
As you said, it's what we eat, but yes, it's also the portions that we eat. And that's definitely one of the big problems with our country. It's the portions.
Yes, definitely the portions.
And if you want to choose one carbohydrate, why do you need the potato salad and the macaroni?
Right. And not only the portions, they're eating every hour, every 2 hours, we believe in this culture, and it's a culture, and it's what we believe and what we bring our children up on. We need a snack. So we eat breakfast, and within less than an hour or 2 hours, we're snacking on something, not understanding that the carbohydrates that you're eating is causing you to be hungry every hour, because it takes about an hour for carbohydrates to eat. And like you said, we make a plate up and we put macaroni and potato salad and coleslaw.
And for our country, obesity starts from even infancy.
Exactly. Yeah. Because we're giving the children, the baby cries, we stick a bottle in his or her mouth. And then when they're able to eat food, we're giving them portions the size of an adult portion. And we're saying to them, eat all of that. You know how many people are starving. You don't know when you're
clean
going
your
to
plate.
Eat again.
Clean
your plate. Yeah. So it's culture, and it's a social culture that we bring our children up on.
Well, I'd like to just reaffirm, with the support of these two well-versed doctors in this troubling subject, obesity is a disease. To be recognized as a disease, just as cancer is a disease, just as diabetes is a disease, it's something that we need to recognize as a disease that is killing. It's the number one killer of behemoths. And there's so many ways that it can kill us. You mentioned cancers. There are at least 15 different cancers that have obesity as one of the number one risk factors for those cancers. And that includes prostate cancer, where you have more aggressive form of prostate cancer if you're obese. That includes breast cancer, which are the two number one cancers in our country, particularly for postmenopausal women, where the estrogens that can lead to breast cancer comes from adipose tissue. So there have been a lot of studies that have come out of the U.S. in the last few years, and there have been some good news at the tunnel, and that's what we want to talk a little bit about, particularly from you, Dr. Arianne Davis-Simmons, and that's GLP-1 receptor agonist. It is because of that that for the first time in the United States in 40 years that there actually has been a slight decline in obesity rates. What is a GLP-1 receptor agonist?
GLP-1 receptor agonists, or GIPs, or peptides. So basically, they are proteins that are made by the gut. So they're made from the L cells and the I cells in the gut. And these peptides or proteins have various roles. One, they send a signal to the brain to say, hey, I'm full, stop eating. Pause, slows down the digestion. And then in diabetics or people who have prediabetes, it helps the pancreas make a little more insulin for the foods coming in. So the whole concept behind using these peptide hormonal therapies to aid in weight loss is exactly what you said. Obesity is a chronic, relapsing, remitting condition. Anyone who's been overweight, they'll go on a diet. They may lose 5 to 10 pounds. But if they slow down the exercise, when those hunger pangs start to come up, they kind of fall off the wagon and they drift back up to that initial weight or even higher. And that's what we call the adipose set point. It's something that's programmed in your brain. And your body tries to hold on, or we call defend, that highest fat mass. So it's better to never become heavy or overweight or obese in the first place, because the body wants to hold on to that. So what these medications do is they help to modulate or kind of change that biochemistry in the brain so that you're able to achieve and sustain lower weight. So it really has changed the game for a lot of people who've struggled over many years. But they are meant to be added onto diet and lifestyle. It's not, oh, I get the jab and I'm going to lose all this weight. You do have to make lifestyle changes, but they help you to that plan so that you can have sustaining weight loss.
And what are the roles of those drugs, medications, with management of diabetes?
Good. So these actual agents actually came initially out of the diabetes study. So what the FDA did was, in 2008, they mandated that all diabetes medications go through what we call cardiovascular outcome trials. So basically, they're safety trials. So they wanted to make sure that they did what they're supposed to do, lower sugars, but they also didn't cause any harm. But with all of this regulation, what they were seeing in these class of medications is that people were losing weight. Right? So they were losing weight and sugars were getting better. And for majority of type 2s, 80 to 90% of type 2 diabetics, they're usually overweight or obese. So now you're getting to the crux of the problem. The obesity is driving this diabetes. So by giving them a medication that helps to lower the weight, it also made the sugars better and also helped to reduce heart attacks and strokes and prevent all of the other weight-related complications. So what they did with these medications is that the companies, the drug companies said, okay, you're losing weight in these diabetes trials, so now let's increase the dose and market them for as obesity medications. And they really have been game changers, where some of the newer agents like Mounjaro or the newer triple therapies that are coming out, you're losing up to 20-25% of your excess body weight. So they're starting to rival surgery. Bariatric surgery. So they definitely are game changers.
And I know that's available in other parts of the world in the pill form. Is it available in the Bahamas yet?
So in the newest semaglutide oral, that has not yet reached our market. We have it at the lower dose, which we use for diabetes. There is some weight loss with it, but that robust kind of 15% has not yet come. That was just approved in November, December. It will surely be here soon.
Well, we'll talk about the elephant in the room. These work. They're proven to work. They could even save your life. There was a recent conference for medical and surgical oncologists in the United States a couple months ago that they had groundbreaking research that showed over a number of years that losing as much as 15 pounds when you're middle age or older can significantly reduce your chance of a number of cancers, including breast cancer, colon cancer, and pancreatic cancer. So losing that 15 pounds, for example, as a postmenopausal, where you're getting that, you have that adipose tissue, where it might be more difficult to lose weight. That's when you're going to gain weight, because now you don't have that get up and go. You don't have to go to work. You're retired. You take it easy. You're not running around up and down. You can even be a little bit depressed. And because you don't have that career to go to and everything else, these GLP-1 receptor antagonists can actually save your life and save you from getting cancer. But the elephant in the room is that they're very expensive.
Yes.
So we're talking to the average Bahamian, what, $500, $550, $600 a month. When most persons don't have $1,000 savings in their savings account, how can they even think about $500, $600? Although it can save hundreds of thousands of dollars later in life from losing their limb or having bypass surgery, etc. Hopefully over time the price will drop. But there is some good news that it can be covered by insurance in certain circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. For diabetics, it will.
For diabetics.
If you're private insured, they will cover it for diabetes.
And many persons who are obese or morbidly obese, that actually can save them a lot of money.
And the other silver lining is that now, since we've now seen that these medications are game changers, they're becoming generics. And with the generics, in comparison to the brand, they are a little bit more affordable in comparison.
Okay, so what is a price for someone listening out there? What is the cheapest you can get for a generic for the lower dose?
So very good. So it actually, okay, great. So it depends on the dosing. And I would say what the misconception is with these medications is that I need to ramp up the dose to get the maximum weight loss. I have to be on the highest. And that's not truly the case. If you have a good lifestyle, meaning you're starting to do a diet and exercise program, we're just talking about moving 30 minutes, 5 days a week, 2 days of strength training, having a reasonable diet, obviously cutting out those processed foods, kind of following a plate method, increasing dietary fiber, protein, and healthy fiber carbs like, you know, sweet potato, brown rice, quinoa. So if you're following a diet and you're exercising, you don't need that high a dose to lose weight. You know, Dr. Martin and I talk about this all the time. I have patients who are on lowest doses of Mounjaro, 2.5, and I have a patient who's lost 100 pounds over a year, but he made the changes. So if you're going to have to dig into that pocket and pay for it, you might as well make the lifestyle change. So I would say on the lower end, either in the generic form, the brand, you can get this around maybe $240, $250 a month in the lowest dose.
Which can save your life.
Which can save your life. If you think about that, if you're feeling full, you're making lifestyle changes, you're not eating the fast food twice a day, it could be comparable.
I mean, that can improve this, your self-esteem, your confidence, your outlook in life.
It's a change.
And everything.
Everything. Head to toe,
your personality, everything else. Particularly for teenagers, where self-esteem is an issue, where they're developing their personality, 60 pounds overweight as a young lady, that can be disastrous. Mm-hmm. That can impact even their studies, their outlook on life, their career path. Mm-hmm. So that $240 plus, obviously, seeing someone like Dr. Jan Martin in terms of education and nutrition and everything else can save their future.
Mm-hmm. Can I just say something here? We put patients on the medication a lot of times, and they're losing the weight. However, we have to look at the behaviors mm-hmm. that do not change just because you're on this medication. And that is why we see a slowing of the weight loss, even though patients are on the medication, whether it's a low dose or high dose. So I have patients that come in front of me, and they're on the medication, yet they're still eating between meals. They're still snacking because they feel that they have to eat. And that's where the behavioral side mm-hmm. comes in, and the cultural mindset that we need to have a snack. We need to be not missing meals. Mm-hmm. And in this culture, missing a meal is, if I have breakfast within 2 hours, I need a snack. Or I need a snack before I go to bed. So they're on the medication. They may be even trying to make those behavioral changes using the plating method. However, their mindsets has to also now connect with these changes, not happen overnight for a lot of persons.
Yeah, they have to change their whole outlook on life. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Dr. Martin brought up an important point, is that behavioral modification, when we talk about
it's
weight loss,
important.
Third component of weight loss. I mean, it's going to be diet, exercise, behavioral modification. And then we add on either surgery or pharmacotherapy meds to help you get to those goals. So very important.
We're not arguing the fact that obesity is a national crisis and a killer, but so is diabetes. We have one of the highest rates of diabetes in the world.
Yes.
As many as 1 in 6 adult Bahamians or residents is either pre-diabetic or diabetic. And for many Bahamians, I don't know if it's cultural, they just don't take their medication. They will wait until they're peeing very frequently or urgently, or they feel like they have a headache, but they don't take on. They said, I'm not taking on diabetes. It's not me. And it's killing them in so many different ways. A lot of them go into depression when they mm-hmm. are diagnosed with diabetes. Mm-hmm. For those who are non-insulin dependent, lifestyle changes, weight loss can actually get them mm-hmm. off the track of being mm-hmm. a diabetic. I know you see a lot of patients with diabetes. Do a lot of them have problems with depression?
They do. And you said it. A lot of them, when they're newly diagnosed, and Ariane sends them to me, the first thing they say to me is, but I don't claim it. You know, we make a joke, but it's claimed you, so let's get started. Mm-hmm. And let's start with looking at how you're eating.
Or I cut out sugar, so I don't need to take my medication.
Right, and they don't understand that the sugar is in those processed foods, that it's not actually sugar that you put in your tea or coffee. That is one of the items of sugar. But the sugar is coming from those processed foods. It's the carbohydrates, the type of carbohydrates that mm-hmm. they're choosing. So I start an education on what is a carbohydrate and the three components of a carbohydrate: fiber, sugar, and starch. You're eating a lot of carbohydrates that are high in starch and sugar, and not enough of the ones that are high in fiber that would keep those blood sugars down. So yes, I do see them, and there's a lot of education on carbohydrates because they need to understand that the carbohydrates and the choices determine their blood sugars, their weight, and how they feel as well. Movement is extremely important, mm-hmm. and we don't like to move. We just don't like to move. And you mentioned that as we get older and we retired now, we don't have that job to go to. We're sleeping later, and we're sitting watching TV or scrolling on the internet, and before you know it, it's most of the day gone and you haven't even moved out of that chair or moved out of the house. And so to get them moving, and I encourage them to take 15 minutes in the afternoon, that's half an hour. And you know, the American Cardiology Association and the Diabetic Association recommends that. So that's the mindsets that we are dealing with obesity and diabetes in this country.
Mm-hmm. So when the diabetic rate in this country, which is astounding, is as high as 80%, and there's a strong link between obesity, being overweight, and depression, do you think that we have a nation of depressed individuals?
I believe so. I believe so, and I believe we're functioning depressive persons. We're functioning. We're highly functioning. Even executives are highly functioning depressive individuals. They go, they have a routine, and they're moving through that routine. However, at the end of the day, we're not living with them, so we don't see when they go home and just slunk. And it shows up in the blood results. It shows up in their weights. It shows up in those physiological changes that you and Dr. David Simmons would see in those blood profiles. So yes, I agree to a certain extent that we have some highly functioning depressive individuals in this country.
And then we have a country of persons who are always in denial. If you're a diabetic,
yep,
they may once every 3-4 weeks check their stick and check their blood glucose, only in the morning, which is always going to be lower. But they don't realize it's after you eat or during the evening.
Definitely.
Or the night that they have to be worried about it. And that's what's so important when we're doing annual bloods. Yeah. And you need to get your blood tests. You don't have to have money. You don't have to have insurance. Just sign up for NHI. Yeah. It's automatic. It just takes that little time that can save your life in this earth. But talk to us about HbA1c. What's the importance of knowing your HbA1c number?
Great. So HbA1c is your three-month blood sugar check. It's looking at how much sugar or glucose is bound to your hemoglobin, which is a protein within your red blood cells.
And you don't need to take it every 3 months.
Yeah.
It
usually gives you the last three-month picture.
Yes.
So it should be included in an annual. In particular, we used to say in anyone over the age of 40, because we're seeing so much diabetes, there's such a strong family history, it really should be included on every annual. For this week, I've seen 4 kids with type 2 diabetes, which we classically thought was a disease that happened only in individuals who were in adulthood over 40.
And then it also will tell you if you're pre-diabetic and you can
stop becoming diabetic.
So
when we talk about health numbers, an A1C is one of your health numbers that you should know. Just like how you should know what's my blood pressure, what is my cholesterol.
What is your PSA?
Yes, what is your PSA? Am I at target? Am I at elevated? Am I at risk? So for diabetes, it's an A1C over 6.5. For pre-diabetes, it's 5.7 to 6.4. And normal would be less than 5.7. So it's important to know what your numbers are and what you can do to kind of get at target. The targets matter. So what you talked about, people burying their head in the sand and not claiming it, it's out of fear and it's out of a lot of misinformation. Yes, everyone has a phone at their fingertips, but there's a lot of misinformation out there. So just because you have diabetes does not mean you're going to end on dialysis or be blind or have an amputation. But if you have poorly controlled diabetes, that will happen. So keeping yourself at target or normalizing yourself from the very beginning, you prevent all of that.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's about prevention. So it's better to address it than wait years.
The extremes of denial in this country over the decades of being a physician and working through Princess Margaret Hospital, where I'd see persons lose a toe, then lose a forefoot, and then below knee amputation and above knee amputation just from poorly controlled diabetes, or near death in ICU for weeks with a diabetic coma. Don't take their medication, they're back 6 weeks later. And the burden on our society.
It's great. It's crazy. Because you're no longer productive.
The economic, not only that.
The economic burden.
Yeah. Yeah.
The strain on the family.
Yeah.
Because many of them are primary providers.
Yeah.
The strain on our healthcare system, because it's taking a valuable ICU bed, taking all the medications that are very expensive, trying to save your life. and then you're so ungrateful that you go and go through the routine. I've seen persons when I was at PMH, even rotating as an intern in internal medicine, in 3 years coming with diabetic coma 7 or 8 times.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Every time they know they were near death, they still don't take their medication. I'm not a diabetic. I don't claim it. I cut down the sugar, or I cut down the salt, so I don't have high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. Oh, why is your blood pressure 240 over 120? Oh, it's because I rushed through traffic, or I had some salt on my eggs this morning, or your machine has to be wrong, or I'm a little bit anxious, I have white cold syndrome. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's always denial. Mm-hmm. So we can give them all the information in the world.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't accept that, we need to get down to the culture, the mindset of the individual.
Yeah.
If the humans are going to be reluctant to follow anybody's advice, and no matter what is provided to them in terms of information, they're going to do something else. Why is anyone dying of colon cancer?
Yeah.
Colon cancer is preventable.
You can screen,
you can remove precancerous polyps, prevent them 5, 6, 8 years before they become cancers.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many persons, stage third stage, fourth stage,
yeah,
colon cancer. No one needs to be dying of prostate cancer. If we catch prostate cancer when it's organ confined and early,
mm-hmm,
we can actually actively surveil you because we've picked it up so early. But there are over 120 men dying of prostate cancer,
yeah,
every single year.
Yeah.
So we can give you all the information,
yeah,
in the world. We can provide NHI, where all the medications through NIB drug card are free for non-communicable diseases, diabetes or hypertension, et cetera, et cetera. Even, mm-hmm, for prostate cancer, you can get medications for free. We can give you your annual screenings, your bloods, your you can be treated like a quote-unquote private patient.
Mm-hmm.
But every single day, someone might say, all right, yeah, I did sign up for NHI, but, you know, I never showed up for the last 5, 6 years. Why?
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, we mentioned depression, we mentioned denial, but there's a fear of not wanting to know.
Exactly.
There's a fear factor in there. And I believe it's cultural again. It's, you know, I've seen my granny, I've seen what my grandparents suffered, I've seen what, and so I may have it and I don't want to know. So there's a high fear factor that we're dealing with as well. And then education. We're doing stuff like this, the radio shows. We have a lot of education now. We need programs now, to intervention programs that would bring groups of persons, mm-hmm, in and run a 2-month program or a 3-month program. Years ago, the government engaged my services and we ran the Get Well Bahamas program. 4 successful years, taking in over 50 persons at a time. Multiply that by the amount of family members we worked with in that 50, you know, with those persons in 3 months. We brought in 50 people, but those persons had to go home to their households. So a lot of the community teaching. Do you know, to date, I still have patients who participated in the Get Well Bahamas program, and they find my services. Mm-hmm. And so programs like that need to be continuous and not dropped when we change government, because those are the programs that impact the larger community.
Mm-hmm.
And we're impacting persons, not only the individual, but their families. We're targeting the behavioral component.
Mm-hmm.
We're targeting the food choices. We can make the Bahamian diet a little healthier just by the how we prepare it. What are we putting in the food when we're cooking it? The amount of salt, the types of fats. Are we baking, boiling, broiling, or grilling with very little sauce, our proteins? Yes, we could have crab and rice, but how much of that,
yeah,
are we putting on the plate? And are we using the crab and rice and the macaroni and the potato salad? The teaching component, the hands-on, we're missing. That's my belief.
Well, as a surgeon, I think I have the highest, the subset of the oldest patients. And I routinely see patients every week, 90-something years old. You wouldn't think they're more than 60. And it's the island life,
yeah,
living off the soil, living off the sea, walking everywhere.
Walk, that's it.
Yep.
Getting exercise, up and about.
Yep.
Farming for their own food, everything else. Yep. Cooking everything in a healthy manner. Fishing. A lot of fish instead of the red meat and everything else. So we can do it, Bahamas, Foot Islands. And we have perfect examples of many of our own relatives who are living longer than us, healthier than us. Mm-hmm. They don't have the big tertiary hospitals out there. Many of them don't have the access to the medication, although that's improving as time goes on. But they're living longer and better lives than we are.
Yeah. But it's also, too, I mean, we talked about food, we talk about movement, but managing stress, making sure you're getting that adequate sleep.
Yes.
All of those play roles in terms of weight, pressure, right? So
that's
if you're
right.
not sleeping and you're at a high stress and you're at managing your stress, you can have higher cortisol levels, makes it harder to lose weight, sugars run a little bit higher. Obviously, yes, diet and movement, but it's we always talk about well-being and the body as a balance, as a whole. So I think we need to work on overall well-being.
Right.
Well, let me look at a scenario. A 40-year-old typical Bahamian woman who has 6 kids, raising them all on her own, has 2 jobs, trying to make enough money to pay tuition, to pay the car insurance, to pay the rent, everything else. And you're asking her to cook in a healthy manner and have the time to broil and to she's just barely making it. Just barely making it, maybe going on 4 hours sleep, trying to improve the quality of and future of their children by helping 6 different children with homework. So sometimes, you know, you say, you know what, let me just go to a fast food restaurant and get food for the kids because I can't do any better.
Yeah. And, you know, that I see that a lot of times. And what I say to those same women is you're trying to make this amount of money work for these 4 or 6 kids. One meal at the fast food restaurant is $10 to $12 or even $15. That's one meal. And sometimes it's per person, right? If you go into the grocery store and get a rotisserie chicken that is already cooked and get some rice and get some cabbage and, some, you know, those kinds of things, and you prepare that, you know, you have leftovers. So even if you're working late, the children can come home and warm that food up until you get home. Even if you buy the ramen noodles, you can make those healthier by adding some carrots and some, you know, some meat, some chicken to it. That's a quick meal. Also look at the portions. You know, you're going into the grocery store and you're piling your grocery shopping cart up with chips and cookies and sweet drinks when you can walk through those aisles and get the vegetables at a reduced rate. At Super Value, when you walk to the back of the produce aisle, they have reduced fruits and vegetables that's packaged. Some of those you can take home and put it in the freezer. Pull it down. So there are ways to make your busy lifestyle and the dollars stretch by choosing healthier options. The fast food restaurants may, on the weekend maybe, but those foods are expensive and one meal can run over $10 per person.
But there's a large majority of Bahamians who are eating fast food
every day, twice, sometimes three times a day.
They have it breakfast,
lunch,
and they're going to have it or the lunch or
dinner.
When they're picking the children up from school, that's dinner.
And then you talk about the economics and the tough times.
Yes.
There's so many Bahamians who spend $20, $25 on lunch.
Yes.
And they barely make that in a day.
I'm a whole physician. I don't buy lunch every day.
Yeah.
So,
I pack my lunch.
Yes.
I mean, it's...
And it's what we pack for our children going to school as well. Why are we giving them Vitamalt? Why are we giving them soda? Water.
Why are we giving them fast food twice a day?
Yes.
For breakfast and for dinner. So
You know, years ago when I did a radio show with the pediatrician, Dr. Lightborn, and he was talking about childhood obesity in the Bahamas at that time, and he said, we're loving our children to death. Case in point, what we're feeding them, we're packing them a lot of sweet juices and chips and cookies, and we call it love.
I mean, we're slowly dying, Bahamas.
Yes.
We're killing each other.
Yes.
We're killing ourselves. We're killing our children.
Yes.
And we don't want to wake up and listen to experts who are trying to sound the alarm. Even how many times, I don't know, throughout the years I've gone on the radio and spoken about the HPV vaccine and how it can basically eradicate cervical cancer for the next generation. Why is anyone under the age of 40 getting cervical cancer? Yeah. But there's still 28-year-olds, 24-year-olds mm-hmm. with children, married, the whole life ahead of them, dying of stage 3 and stage 4 cervical cancer, which is a horrible death. Mm-hmm. So we need to know that, and that's a free vaccine. That's a free vaccine for boys and for girls. Yeah. Preteens and teen boys and girls that can prevent you from getting every related HPV related cancer, including head and neck cancers, including penile cancer, including cervical cancer, or even cancer of the vagina. You don't want to get any of those things. We have a call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Yes, good evening. How are you, Dr. Suing, in there?
Very well, thank you.
That's good. Yes, you're going to be talking about this diabetic thing and diabetes, right? The first thing you mentioned is basically we're an obese nation, right?
Yes.
So obesity, you get this diabetes, right? But, I mean, like, could a bony person get diabetes? So that person would, like...
Definitely, but I'll let the expert, Dr. Okay. Davison.
Great. Thanks for that question. Speak. So when we talk about type 2 diabetes, which is the most common type of diabetes, 80 to 90% of those individuals are going to be overweight or obese. However, there are lean type 2 diabetics. It's about 10% of type 2 diabetics that are lean. And those individuals tend to have a very strong family history of diabetes, so they develop it at lower body weights. However, we know that with increasing weight gain, you have worsening of sugars because of that insulin resistance due to the excess fat.
Does that adequately answer the question, sir?
Yeah. Anyway, but my doc, a couple more questions I've asked to my doc. If I choose not to, say, go to a doctor and get all your checkup and this and that, and we make the medical fraternity, my friend, they know me better than I know myself, person, do you think I stand a better chance of living longer than the person who would every day or every year have these annual checkups and the doctor taking all the pills and all of the regimen that the doctor requires for them?
Well,
to see?
If you're going to go and then it goes in one ear and goes out the other and you don't take the medication and you don't even follow up for the annual blood results or take heed of any advice, it's almost a waste of time. But if you yourself, you have 90% of your destiny in your own hands in terms of your health.
Yeah,
it's how you eat. It's how you prepare your meals. It's being active. It's reducing your alcohol intake, avoiding any form of cigarette or cigar smoking. Bahamian men don't want to hear that, particularly about the cigars.
Yeah,
but
marijuana is good, right?
I'm not going to say that. I'll let Dr. Davis speak about that.
But prevention is better than cure. So if what I say to my patients is, we can prevent the complications of these diseases through good control, but if you don't even know you have it, how are you going to prevent the complications? So if we look at the average person who has type 2 diabetes, they've had it for 5 years before they're diagnosed. Mm-hmm. So those elevated sugars are causing damage because they have no idea. Because everyone thinks they're going to get, it's blurry vision, I'm going to be urinating more. That's not the extreme sugars. So that means the sugars are persistently over 250. What is a normal blood sugar? It's going to be about 70 to 140 throughout the day. So it is definitely a silent killer. And we can prevent all the complications.
Oh, well, you mentioned marijuana. You can debate all we want whether it should be legalized or not legalized. Maybe at one point for you.
No, I'm not talking about being legal or illegal. You know, I'm merely saying that when you say smoking,
Yes, I'm talking about nicotine, and I'm talking about cigars and vaping. Yes,
so smoking nicotine. Is it harmful? They said nicotine is harmful. So marijuana is marijuana harmful.
There are pros and there are cons, but I'll say just from a legal standpoint, I know of even professional friends of mine who have been caught by police smoking marijuana, and it's changed the path of their life in a negative way that I can't even put into words.
Yeah, okay,
how many hundreds of young men have been caught with marijuana, and it's changed their whole trajectory of their life? So even from that standpoint, it can be very harmful to you and your future.
Okay, you're talking about being caught by law enforcement. I understand that, right?
Yes.
What I'm asking you is the mere fact that you can't negate the fact that marijuana has its medicinal values, okay?
Yes.
Right now, it may be illegal, right?
Correct.
But it does have medicinal. I can tell you what, right? Me, as an individual, right? I've been out, right?
Yes.
And I mean, it was like 24 years ago. I think I'm the only individual in this country who have a right to smoke marijuana, you know, because I get a letter from my doctor, Dr. Norman Gates, okay? And in this letter, he's saying, until you get it right with this year illegal marijuana, right? My patient would be there smoking, you know. But moment I tell you something, I tell you no lie, right? You know what? Last year, right? I've been asthmatic all my life, right? And my lungs were totally blocked up, right? I went to the walk-in clinic to buy a bottle of oxygen for 450 from Melvin and Fire. You tell me you have to go see a doctor to get prescription. Why is it that they got to get prescription for air? You know? Air don't kill air, it's give life. But then I move on, right? So the nurse is going to tell me my blood pressure. Oh, your blood pressure is 280, 180. You need to be on meds. You need to be on pills. But why are you on meds? You know what? You know why I'm on meds? Because guess what? The nurse knows what she's doing. And even the doctors, they know what they're doing, right? Anytime any person presents themselves in the emergency room with any kind of trauma or any kind of breathing difficulties or anything, even if their mind is perplexed, the pressure is right up. Right? You know, and
I understand your points, and you have made some wonderful points, but you have to look at it from many different points of view. I know people from all walks of life, and I know even some drug dealers in the past, and just as patients, and they'll even say, you know what, how we get loyal customers for marijuana, we lace it with a little bit of angel dust or LSD. So you got to be careful. It's a dangerous game out there. All right, we were getting a little bit off track, but let's talk about obesity and being overweight. So we talked about the GLP-1 receptor agonist. You, Dr. Jan Martin and Dr. Ariane Davis-Simmons, you're involved through Doctors Hospital in a weight loss program. And obviously there are those who are morbidly, obviously the GLP-1 receptor agonist will help. What is the role for surgical intervention in terms of more morbid obese individuals?
Great. So when we talk about the criteria for weight loss surgery, it's going to be a BMI of 35 or more with a weight-related complication. So meaning like diabetes, obstructive sleep apnea, fatty liver. So if you have a complication related to the weight and you're of a certain weight criteria, you'd be a candidate for that surgery. Or if you have a body mass index of over 40, which is severe obesity. So weight loss surgery, again, is an add-on to lifestyle, exercise, behavioral modification. And with weight loss surgery, you can lose up to about 30% of your body weight, 60% of your excess body weight.
And when relating to obesity and numerous non-communicable disorders in this country, another pandemic, another medical crisis in this country is actually obstructive sleep apnea. Mm. And very few persons understand even what obstructive sleep apnea is. How does obstructive sleep apnea make someone gain weight?
Great. So the thing is, if you're having obstructive sleep apnea, you're having what we call microarousals throughout the night. So when that oxygen level starts to fall, carbon dioxide starts to build, your body wakes up from that deeper sleep into that lighter sleep. And as we know,
from REM sleep to non-REM sleep. Yes.
So that deep sleep is where the body repairs itself. That's when cortisol goes down to its lowest. That's when growth hormone is higher.
And testosterone.
Maladaptation changes help to promote weight gain. So if you're having higher cortisol when it's supposed to be lowest, it leads to more central obesity. For men, low testosterone.
Which kills erections.
It does. And it makes it more central adiposity, so more of that beer belly type of look. And if you are chronically tired with sleep apnea, how are you supposed to exercise?
Yeah.
You don't have any motivation to exercise. You're depressed. So it becomes, again, this chicken or the egg thing where you're gaining more weight, sleep apnea is getting worse, you don't want to exercise, and then you're developing more chronic diseases.
And then we see over 100 persons dying in traffic fatalities every year. How many of them are related to obstructive sleep apnea, where it reaches a point where persons fall asleep at a stoplight,
where they have to
pull over to the side of the road because they fall asleep on the dime?
Yeah.
They watch NBA game, they don't even see half a quarter because they're already falling asleep. I literally see patients, I'm calling them in the waiting room, and they're fast asleep.
Yeah.
They come into the room, I'm talking in mid-seconds and sentence, they're falling asleep again. Yeah. And they drink caffeine after caffeine or energy drink just to get by. And it's tearing away the quality of life. I mean, it's a vicious cycle I always speak about. Obesity causes sleep apnea, which causes the low testosterone, which causes the BC to get worse. And then mix in that, erections go to hell.
Heart attack, diabetes.
Increased risk of cardiovascular event, heart attack or stroke. You're going to be in male menopause, hot flashes, irritability, depression, no drive to do anything. It can ruin your relationship, your marriage. It can make you very irritable, emotionally distant. Father, it can take away your drive in your career. It will ruin
that's
your life.
And that's where the depression comes in as well. The thing about it too is when men and women, but mostly men, they go and they have, they're diagnosed with the sleep apnea, they don't use the CPAP machines. They don't like sleeping with it. So, yes you're diagnosed. You get the device, but you're not sleeping with it. And I've had many patients that come and sit. In order to have your surgery, your bariatric surgery, and if sleep apnea is one of the conditions we're trying to control prior to surgery, you have to be wearing that CPAP machine for more than a month in succession every night so that the cardiologist can then run his studies to ensure that your oxygen and carbon dioxide levels are balanced prior to surgery. People are not using the CPAP machine because they say it's too cumbersome. They don't like sleeping with it. As you said earlier, it's the chicken and the egg.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And there are other solutions. There are some instances where you can use a jaw adjustment device where they basically take a mold of your mouth and it moves your jaw forward. It's almost like a more complex form of a retainer. And that can, in some patients, treat the mild or moderate sleep apnea very effectively, and a lot of persons are not aware that that's available. We have dental impressionists, Bahamian dental impressionists in our country that provide that service. So you can treat that sleep apnea, lose the weight, get your erections back on track, take away the high risk of a stroke or a heart attack, and not have to use the CPAP machine, which very few persons are going to be compliant with it, and you can't really blame them in many circumstances.
And I mean, from the weight loss perspective, to cure the sleep apnea, you don't need that great a weight loss. I mean, we're talking about, 10-15%. It will get better.
Yeah.
If you have prediabetes, just 7.5% weight loss can lead to remission and put you back into normal. If you have 10% weight loss. So it's not like we need huge numbers. A small amount of weight loss is going to have benefit on your metabolic
profile.
And another, we're talking about a national medical crisis that are facing us, metabolic syndrome. Very few persons, they're living with metabolic syndrome.
Yeah.
But they don't understand what it's doing to them, what it is. What is metabolic syndrome?
So we've been talking about a lot of it. So I think people don't realize it's what we call Syndrome X. It is that trifecta of high triglycerides, or what we call dyslipidemia, right? So high triglycerides.
Well, there's a long list, and you need two or three out of the criteria.
But it's the prediabetes, the impaired fasting sugars, the obesity, the increased waist circumference, and, elevated blood pressures and the lipid profile. And most people have all of that because all of those things run together. So most individuals who are coming in who are obese or overweight with diabetes, they have high blood pressure, they have dyslipidemia, high cholesterol, they have metabolic syndrome. It's just they're not being told that they have this trifecta. Yeah. And it increases your risk of death.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sudden death, too.
We were heralding the benefits of GLP-1 receptors agonists, along with obviously lifestyle changes, the change in your just thought processes in terms of food and exercise and getting rid of the sedentary lifestyle. But there was research data presented that was quite striking at the AUA in the United States this year, American Urology Association, that showed that GLP-1 receptor agonists actually showed significant increases in both not only the total testosterone, but your free testosterone, which means you're going to have more energy, more vitality, more sexual drive, more, better erections, maintaining your muscle mass. It can be a game changer. Mm-hmm. So it can get you to lose that weight, prevent you from getting a heart attack or stroke. It can get your erections back on track. It can prevent you from getting up to 15 different cancers. So it but obviously you have to do the work as well. Exactly. It's not an easy solution, yeah. And obviously it's not an inexpensive one as well. But if you do have the ability to get it, mm-hmm. and you are in the category to get it, so obviously you need to have it administered, and the decision has to be made whether to administer it by an internist or an endocrinologist or a physician, yeah. of note. You just don't go to anyone. And they're trying to make a dollar off of you. Giving you.
No, yeah, I would caution people not to buy it off people from the street.
And there are a lot of.
It's happening. So you have a lot of. You have people who are compounding it who are not even mm-hmm. pharmacists. They're doing it in their house and they're selling it to people. Yes. I would caution against that, because who knows what you're getting.
And what you're injecting
you
into your body.
You have no idea. Exactly. You have no technique when people are mixing it. And who really knows? Right?
Yes.
So I would caution against that. I would say if it's something that you, and a lot of these people are selling it for $300, $400 a month. So you can get legitimate medication or true generics from the pharmacy.
Or even less
that
than
are
the same
even
price.
Less than yeah. that. Or even less yeah. than that.
Yeah. And so be monitored by a physician. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Jan Martin, you have decades of experience. We have a dying nation. How are we going to save the nation? let's put it in your hands.
Well, okay. I use an acronym, and I encourage persons to, you know, employ this in their daily lives. Well, you know, I talked about interventions level, but on a personal level, PIP. You plan your day. You plan what you're going to wear to work. You plan whatever it is you're going to do. So plan what you're going to buy when you go to the grocery mm-hmm. stores. The I is the ingredients. Look in your cupboards. Do not go in store without a list. And we do that often. I'm caught doing it sometimes myself. But when you go, if not, you duplicate what you already have, and you can save money there. So look at the ingredients that you're purchasing. And then, how are you preparing those meals? Are you baking, boiling, or grilling with very little sauce, your proteins? And are you looking at your carbohydrates? Are they healthier carbohydrates? Fiber, more fiber, less starch, less sugar. And also portions, the portions of food that you're putting on your plate. The plating method is half the plate vegetables, a quarter of the plate your protein, and another quarter your starchy vegetable. But not the macaroni, potato salad, and coleslaw on the same plate. Pick one and look at the portions. And also, you know, how are we going to save ourselves? We need to look at ourselves in the mirror and decide, when am I going to make this change? Why do I make this change? I love my family. Yes, I have 4 or 5 children. I have to work these extra shifts. If I don't take care of myself and something happens to me, what's going to happen to my children? So, you know, we're told to put the mask on ourselves first in the airplane. So that's what we need to do. Take ownership for the illnesses that we've been diagnosed with, and then start to make these changes one step at a time. You know, if you're taking 2 tablespoons of sugar in your tea or coffee, let's start this week with 1.5, and then next week go down to 1. So small changes will produce the significant health results that we're looking for. And remember that all bites count.
And what we drink also is very important.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Energy drinks are not healthy.
They're
Gatorade
not.
Gatorade is they're not healthy. Sure, stop giving your 6-year-old Gatorade every day for lunch.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
And we need to get active, Bahamas.
Yes.
And if we're going to exercise 3 or 4 times a week, do something you love. If you don't like going to the gym, then don't bother.
Dance.
Swim. Or
walk.
Find something you love. Yeah. Do it in groups and encourage each other.
Exactly.
We have a call. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks. Very well, thank you.
Man, I was sleeping and I just woke up and heard your show.
Well, I appreciate that we woke you up.
Man, listen. So I called to say this because I know all about to go. Right? You need to do the show again. You need to invite your guests again.
Oh, I plan to. Thank you. Yeah. I hope you encourage them to come back.
And I think what you need to do is you need to let the public know that you're going to do the show for about a month consecutively. And so we can tune in. Because, everything what they were saying, it's just on pocket, you know. It takes some time.
I agree.
To ask a question because I just found out about some things, you know. You always heard about menopause. You know, women go through menopause. I just heard about andropause.
The male version of menopause is a real thing. I've written them in the paper many times about that.
Listen, man, and that is real.
It is. Yes.
When I saw some of the symptoms, I was like, wow. And, you know, you be gaining weight and you wondering how you gaining the weight. And
you get a beer belly, you don't drink beer.
You know, and a lot of things you were talking about. I called because I heard you talking about the GLP-1, right?
Yes.
The GLP-1, and you're talking about how you could get a physician to do. Where can you go for that? And what is like the cost of that? What is that going to cost somewhere around? And like any place where you can go to get that? So you can know if you're in that range, like if you can afford that kind of thing and where you can go, you know, because, you know, as you get older, you want to get healthier.
Great.
Okay,
yes.
So I'll listen, but you have to invite all of these, your panelists, you have to invite them again. You have to.
Thank you for your encouragement, and
really
I definitely
awesome.
Will do that.
This is awesome.
Thank you.
Great. In terms of getting the medication, I encourage patients to talk to their primary care provider. It's important to get your annual screening, but if you are overweight and or obese, you would be a candidate for these medications. So you can talk to your provider about that, or you can see an endocrinologist like myself at Family Medicine Center at Doctors Hospital. In terms of the cost of the medications, it's really going to depend on the dosing. Obviously, lower dosing is going to be cheaper, more affordable than the highest dose. Lower dosing of Mounjaro or generic Mounjaro or generic Ozempic would be anywhere between $240 to about $300 a month, and that would be inclusive of one shot weekly.
This hour has gone very quickly.
Yes.
I don't know when we're going to do part two, but look in your schedules, ladies.
I'm just encouraging the nation to make the changes, the lifestyle changes that we recommended throughout the show daily, one step at a time. Love on yourself first. That's the way you're going to reach your family and you know, reach the changes that you're looking for. If you've been diagnosed with a condition, as we spoke about diabetes, or if you are obese, then, you know, see someone like Dr. Davis and myself so that we can assist you with making those lifestyle changes. Remember that the foods that we're eating are highly addictive, and so it is important for us to be cognizant and intentional about our food choices and exercise daily.
And your closing remarks, Dr. Ariane Davis-Simmons?
What I would say is that prevention is better than cure. Make sure that you get your annual screening, know your health numbers, know if you're at target, what changes you can make, talk to your provider. So don't bury your head in the sand. And small changes go a long way. As simple as cutting out juices, sodas, you can lose 1 to 2 pounds a week. So small changes go a long way. Yeah.
So obesity is a disease, and we must treat it as such. It is a crisis in our nation, and it's destroying the fabric of our society and our future. So in every level, we need to address it. And I think that it starts from infancy, from young children, letting them learn to be active, teaching them to eat right. That will go a whole long way. We can save not only this generation, but the next generation and many generations to come. So on a personal note, I'd like to thank Dr. Jan Martin for all her service to the country throughout the years and all she's doing positively to empower persons in terms of diabetic knowledge, in terms of fighting obesity. That's a huge task, and I'm sure it's frustrating. My kudos to you. To my first cousin, Dr. Ariane Davis-Simmons, I would first of all like to say to my Uncle Frank and to my Aunt Gemma. You must be very proud. Dr. Ariane Davis-Simmons, an internist and endocrinologist. Her sister, Dr. Neka Davis, who is a pediatric dentist. And her other sister, Dr. Kayla Davis, who's an internist, pulmonologist, and critical care specialist. Well done, Dr. Davis-Simmons and your sisters, and thank you for all you did in raising these three bright, beautiful young Bahamian ladies. You've done your father and your mother proud, Ariane, and thank you for coming. And thank you, Uncle Frank. And just one last quote I'd like to say, that no matter what we're facing, all the obstacles and darkness, a quote from Amanda Gorman, there is always light if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it. Good night, Bahamas, and have a safe and productive week. This is Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinter. Good night.
Good night.
Urologist speak. Urologist speak.